From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy, broadcasting this week from Monroe, Louisiana. State of Belief airs every weekend on radio stations nationwide and is available as a podcast on iTunes and other leading podcast platforms. I urge you to subscribe to it today. This program is made possible in great part by the generous support of our listeners. If you've made a donation this week, please let me say a very sincere thank you. If you haven't pitched in yet, information on how you can help keep this show on the air is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Now, here's what's coming up this week on State of Belief Radio.
Transgender confusion, gender identity confusion, is an emotional disorder that should be treated professionally and compassionately. Gender identity confusion should not be exploited by social activists who want to deny the God-given distinction between the sexes. This is a rebellion against God's plan.
After perfecting attacks on people simply for whom they love, the political religious right has obscenely expanded its divisive rhetoric to transgender persons. There are lawsuits demanding, for example, the right to fire a transgender employee on the basis of deeply held religious convictions. Yes, of course, we told you this was coming as different judicial and legislative actions chipped away at the tolerance and coexistence that helped our union survive for over 200 years. Now that it's happening, we'll get insights from Lewis Mitchell, Executive Director of TransFaith. Our conversation is the latest installment on our special series entitled Whosoever You Love.
Tasked with protecting faith and freedom, lifting up the freedom of conscience, and the independence of government and religion from each other, as mandated by the Constitution under which we all live.
If ever there was a time that affirms the importance of Interfaith Alliance, that time is now. Rabbi Jack Moline, president of the Alliance, spoke this week at the Reimagining Interfaith Rally in Lafayette Park across from the White House. From policy advocacy to voter education, the days are just too short. But we'll still take a few minutes of Jack's time for an update on this week's State of Belief Radio. But first...
So this faith that Americans adhere to is something, has something the state can never provide. This faith provides meaning and purpose and joy in life. But in recent years, the cultural climate in this country and in the West more generally has become less hospitable to people of faith. Many Americans have felt that their freedom to practice their faith has been under attack. And it's easy to see why. Americans from a wide variety of backgrounds are concerned about what this changing cultural climate means for the future of religious liberty in our country. President Trump heard the concern. I believe this unease among the American people is one reason he was elected. In substance, he said he respected people of faith and he promised to protect them in the free exercise of that faith. He declared, we would say, Merry Christmas again. Free exercise means a right to act or abstain from action. They include the principle that government shouldn't impugn one's motives or beliefs. We don't give up our rights when we go to work, start a business, talk about politics, or interact with the government. We don't give up our rights when we assemble or join together. We have religious freedom as individuals and as groups. In short, we have not only the freedom to worship, but the right to exercise our faith. The Constitution's protections don't end at the parish parking lot, nor can our freedoms be confined to our basements. Under this administration, the federal government is not just reacting to these challenges. We are actively seeking, carefully, thoughtfully, lawfully, to accommodate people of faith. Religious Americans are no longer an afterthought. We will take potential burdens on one's conscience into consideration before we issue regulations or policies.
Those are the words of the nation's attorney general, sworn to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, which is supposedly to apply to all Americans, regardless of the faith they follow or choose not to follow. Jeff Sessions was speaking at what was billed a religious liberty summit, but it was evident that this administration has a very narrow view of the issue indeed. Of the Americans marginalized by this rhetoric, and that includes pretty much anyone who's not a conservative Christian, none were more excluded than atheists. And that's why I wanted to get the thoughts of the Secular Coalition, represented today by Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dann. Mark, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much, Reverend Getty. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sessions started with words that I couldn't agree with more. He said, and I'm quoting, "A dangerous movement, undetected by many, is now challenging and eroding our great tradition of religious freedom. It must be confronted and defeated." End of quote. The problem is, while the true threat is the relentless politicization of Christianity in this country, the AG was talking about secularism.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mark, why do you want to destroy America?
You know, quite frankly, look, this is a very different view of the world. Our view of the love, whether you are a Baptist, atheist, Quaker, Jewish, humanist, is that our view is of love, it's of compassion, and it's of inclusion. Attorney General Sessions demonstrated that his view is of siege and it's of paranoia. It is that we are under attack. And even Sessions' own Methodist church censured him from using the Bible to justify the administration's child detention policies. So this is not a form of religious liberty at all. This is a form of my religious interpretation trumping our secular rights.
Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts when you heard Sessions speaking?
My thoughts were that this is very scary. And I think about what has been happening in the country over the past few months, and whereas we are people who believe very much in the separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what Sessions' task force does is that it empowers people sort of like the Kim Davises of the world. And as you and your listeners may recall, Kim Davis was the Rowan County, Kentucky clerk who basically claimed a religious exemption, that because of her interpretation of her religious beliefs, she doesn't have to do her job. And so the plaintiffs sued and said, no, you have to do your job. The courts agreed with the plaintiffs, but now that this task force gives people like Kim Davis the full weight of the federal of the Department of Justice, also being backed up by Trump's executive orders, gives people like Kim Davis the full backing of the federal government. And I think that is going to be very dangerous in years to come when someone's interpretation of their faith will outweigh people's ability to access publicly available goods and services or mm-hmm. participating in commerce or in the marketplace.
The Christianist agenda is being relentlessly advanced in the courts as well as through elected representatives that simply reject the principle of separation of church and state. Where do you see these constitutional values actually being defended?
I see that the Justice Department is going back from the separation of church and state. I see that this is very much a move in the wrong direction. The task force itself is being backed up by a memorandum, and the Justice Department outlined about 20 aspects of things they deem as important. One provision in there was that the Justice Department is really no longer going to enforce the Johnson Amendment, and the Johnson Amendment is a provision in the tax law that prevents churches from engaging in political activity. Well, church wants to engage in political activity, or house of worship wants to engage in political activity, it is free to do so. Another one of the 20 points is that Americans can fully bring their religious interpretation to the marketplace or interacting with government. It empowers the Kim Davises of the world. Government can't burden any aspect of religious observance or practice, even asking them for a form for a religious exemption. So these 20 principles, most of which are pretty dangerous, and it is saying that my religious interpretation is more important than your secular rights as a citizen, as a taxpayer, and as a human being.
Are you encouraged or a little nervous about the number of people who understand what's going on and really want to fight for real constitutional values?
I'm encouraged. I see every single day here at the Secular Coalition with people of many faiths who believe in the separation of church and state. I see it that people are engaging their representatives. They are calling people, their senators, about Kavanaugh. And a quick plug, if folks want to help engage their senators, please go to our website and sign up, because we're doing a very strong part of that as well. You're seeing people getting engaged in voter registration. People are paying attention, and people are holding elected officials accountable. People are running for office, and people are demanding their voices are being heard. I'm doing this call from a pretty gray day in Washington, D.C., but I think that people are really figuring out what is important. What are the rights and liberties that we may have taken a little bit for granted, but I see every single day that people are fighting and fighting hard for them.
Would you talk about the effect that this overrunning with the religious right, what is that doing to America?
You're seeing very much a fundamentalist interpretation of Scripture. So people who don't believe in LGBT equality are very much asserting themselves. People who don't really believe in the separation of church and state are very much asserting themselves. Other aspects where you see this could easily come into play, I think is probably going to be coming in, is the Kavanaugh decision, is Kavanaugh's nomination. And one thing that Kavanaugh wrote about, and talked a little bit about this earlier, is that Kavanaugh said that having a simple form where you get to request a religious exemption is too much. It's too much of a burden. And so even simple things of accountability, responsibility, if it comes to a religious exemption of whatever that is, then you don't have to be accountable. One of the 20 provisions in the memorandum, and then that the task force empowers, simply allows that government can't really even second guess or question any type of religious interpretation or exclusion. So I think this is, if people feel that everyone has a right to the public square, everyone has a right to freedom of speech, everyone has a right to move forward. This definitely weighs the scales a little bit onto people who have a very fundamentalist view and can tell others what to do.
Mm-hmm. Mark, tell us some of the priorities and your dreams for what the Secular Coalition ought to be doing in the days ahead.
So in terms of the Kavanaugh nomination, we're working very much in coordination with groups that are opposed to this. Some are faith-based organizations. There's also our 19-member organizations. We were just on the Hill talking to Doug Jones's office. We were just talking to Senator Donnelly's office about why this nominee really matters, why he's risky, and why a lot of the secular traditions we hold dear could be up for grabs. And I think senators are, you're seeing that they're not getting Kavanaugh's full record when he worked for the Bush administration. Mm-hmm. You're seeing someone who is not independent. But you're also seeing at the same time people who are calling, people who are visiting their senators, people who are writing in. And that's really big, especially as people start to hear from their constituents more. I know for a fact that every single audit office is taking a good count of who's for, who's against. So I would encourage all of your listeners to please make your voice heard. Even if your senator has already come out one way or another about this, they still need to know that people who support separation of church and state are looking in on this, and that they are, and that this is a very important issue to them. We think the confirmation hearings will start moving forward in early September, another round of interviews by senators, and then an eventual vote. So it's going to be a pretty busy couple weeks here. And as for the Secular Coalition itself, we're also taking a strong look at the appropriations process, because there are a few provisions in some of the House bills that try to eliminate the Johnson Amendment and also try to remove D.C.'s death with dignity law. So those are things that we're very much concerned about as well. And as we move towards the 116th Congress, I think it'll take a look at where we are electorally, but I think it's how can we start thinking about what does it mean to be a secular-minded person, and what are, based on science, reason, can we start moving that type of legislation forward?
Just so our listeners will know, if they want to follow what you're doing, if they want more information, give them the contact information so they can keep up with Secular Coalition.
Sure. You can follow us on Twitter at secular.org. You can find us on Facebook. And if you really want to get involved, you don't have to be an atheist, agnostic, or humanist to really have a strong impact. One program I'm really proud of, and one of the reasons why I love my job, is that very much a lot of our strength comes from our grassroots network. Mm-hmm. And we're looking for people who want to do a little bit more than, which is very important, of sending an email. But people who, on the district level, want to build relationships with their local member of Congress's offices or their senator's office and really be a point person for secular ideas. And again, if you're religiously affiliated, that's great. We'd love to have you. If you're not religiously affiliated, that's great. We'd love to have you. And if you want to join that, simply write to my colleague. Her name is Sarah Levin, and it's Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, at secular.org. And we absolutely are going to need the help moving forward. And plus, I think it's actually a lot of fun being able to establish those relations as well.
Mark Dann is the Director of Governmental Affairs at the Secular Coalition. It's such an important time. It's such an important job that you have. Mark, thank you for taking time to be with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much, Reverend. I appreciate it.
There's lots more still to come on this week's show. Stay tuned. We'll hear about the questions Interfaith Alliance wants senators to ask Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. But first, Whosoever You Love with Transfaith Executive Director Louis Mitchell. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. as political religious right forces in this country converge to pose a very real threat to the hard-won rights and dignity of LGBTQ persons, we are committing to amplifying the voices of hope and inspiration that are so badly needed today. That's why we're presenting a twice-monthly series of conversations that we're calling Whosoever You Love. And joining me now is Louis Mitchell, Executive Director of Transfaith. Louis, thank you for being with us today.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Would you start by briefly summarizing what Transfaith is all about and where the organization originated and what you're doing?
Well, Transfaith is an organization. Our offices are in Philadelphia, but we serve wherever we are called to serve worldwide. We are an organization for trans people of every identity and every faith, spiritual, or energetic practice that adds to their vitality. We work both with trans folk to support them, and we work with established religious or spiritual practices to support them in being more inclusive.
Mm-hmm. What resources do you provide for transgender persons of faith as well as their families and allies?
Well, we have a number of trainings. One of our trainings, Trans Faith for Allies, is actually a free online course. We offer trainings around the country. And most of our work with trans folk is around connecting them with resources and other like believers so that we are able to break through some of their isolation. Isolation is one of the biggest problems that face the trans community.
Do you have people joining you as an organization? What's the way people relate to you?
You can go to www.transfaithonline.org to find out affiliates. We're also on Facebook and on Instagram. We don't have a membership, so to speak. We have a great many friends and allies around the country and around the world that work with us and work for us in their locations. Uh-huh. So we don't have to quite be everywhere. Mm-hmm. We can be represented by others who are part of our trans faith family. We offer a training both in small community groups and also to nonprofits called Being Brave Together, mm-hmm. which is a one-day intensive on working through difference for like-minded communities and really giving voice to how we operate from our different spheres, whether that's gender, affectional orientation, race, class, ability, national identity. A lot of where we get lost is really in the languaging of our differences and realizing that we have more in common than not.
Tell me, how are the transgender people that you deal with handling the kind of reactions they've been getting from religious groups?
Well, this is not a new phenomenon. Most of us transitioned into these kind of responses.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is not a new phenomenon. We are developing our own ministries. Many people are flocking to seminaries
mm-hmm.
so that they can then be authorities on their various texts and sacred doctrines and find out where they fit.
Uh-huh.
They're also standing up and being counted in their churches and mosques and temples and saying, I'm here, and you need to treat me with the same love and respect that you treated me with 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of changes internally and externally of people and allies, family members and partners, who are really speaking to the need for inclusion.
Do you have resources available for religious organizations that want to affiliate with you and be a part of the kind of ministry that you have?
We have some resources, but none of them are one size fits all. So I would encourage people that are interested to reach out to us through our website and let us tailor something specifically for your need in your location. Even within denominations, region makes a huge difference,
mm-hmm.
as you know. www.transfaithonline.org.
My guest on Whosoever You Love is Louis Mitchell, Executive Director of Transfaith. Louis, we're seeing the political religious right expand their hate campaign against lesbian and gay persons to include transgender Americans. Certainly, the threats against military service members were beyond unconscionable. Now we are seeing attempts in the courts to create a religious conviction premise to allow discrimination against transgender employees. How worried are you about these developments?
I'm concerned about the developments. And, you know, any type of acceptance has been relatively new. So most of us of a certain generation have always lived under these kinds of fears and restrictions. I think not only in LGBT and trans lives, but also in racial and gender lives, there's a lot being rolled on, and they're all connected. The notion that we're going to go back to the kind of segregation and cis-hetero male power domination of the 40s and 50s is a desire for many people, mm-hmm. but it will be fought against now as it was then. So fear plays a part in it, but we have a legacy of courage that plays a bigger part.
Mm-hmm. Is there a political dimension to what you're doing?
I think some would say so, but that is not our goal. Our goal is not political advocacy, but individual vibrancy and spiritual and faith solvency and growth.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who are, let's say, of the religious right, they would say this is political, but that is not our intention or goal.
Mm-hmm. Would you talk about how trans faith works to support the people being marginalized by anti-trans initiatives?
Primarily by offering resources and additional support. So everybody's kind of journey is a little bit different. So
mm-hmm.
we have people that are 70 years old that have been pastors and have transitioned and are now ostracized by their church of their upbringing. They're looking for other denominations or worship settings that will be more inviting to them and individual support with their families and loved ones on their transition. We have outreach from people who have long been out of church but have felt a yearning to find a place to explore various spiritualities. Each of these has a different kind of inroad, and we're able to connect people with other people that can support them individually.
Hmm. One of the most interesting conversations that we've had about this subject on State of Belief Radio was a long discussion about transgender people in the military and what it is doing to them to see the president's at least first efforts to try and get rid of them. Along that line, what is the harm, including spiritual harm, that transgender persons suffer when they are marginalized by public policy?
Well, I think that, you know, the harm in terms of people finding their own selfhood with some freedom from fear of housing and losing their children and losing their partners and not being able to have their health concerns addressed is something that's universal. It's not just trans people. It's also people who are undocumented. It is all kinds of people are within these things. And we're returning to a time when segregation of services and access now is focused on LGBT and on trans people. But historically, it has also been focused on other groups of people. We have a lot of lessons to learn. And so while the spiritual diminishment is in not being able to find yourself
mm-hmm.
and not being able to find other people that love and support you in your wholeness and in your identity, we also have a long history of people using various tools that we can still pick up and use to surmount those things. I tend to like to focus more on our power than on our disempowerment.
Hmm. Louis, what should organized religion be doing right now to stand with the transgender community in this country?
Well, I don't know that they have to do anything specific to trans people. They need to understand that our primary call is to love our neighbors and that everyone is our neighbor, regardless of gender and creed. There is a way in which the love that comes from our doctrines, specifically as Christians, is being misused in a way that separates us. There is nothing biblical that is designed to separate us from one another.
Yeah, I understand that. I know that you understand what I'm about to say, that those principles certainly are applicable, but there are people, unfortunately, who set the transgender community outside the idea of a neighbor.
Well, you know, perhaps they should go back and read a little bit more about what Jesus said about who your neighbor is. Go back to the Good Samaritan story and go back to those things. And I would also appeal to them to go back to Acts and realize that the only reason non-Jewish people became Christians was because of the baptism of an Ethiopian eunuch. So perhaps understanding is the least they can do. A debt of gratitude might be more important.
What else do our listeners need to know from you to understand about what you're doing and to be supportive of what you're doing?
The thing that I would say more than anything else is to understand that trans people have been around forever and will continue to be around forever. We are not a new and exciting hula hoop of invention.
Mm-hmm.
And we are people. We are spiritual people. We are people of faith. We are doing what we do to answer to a higher calling with or without support. But if support is something that you'd like to do, reach out and get involved and see how individually you can support us in your worship setting or in your region. We'd be happy to have the help.
And that opens the door then to say, once again, tell the listeners how they can get in touch with you and offer their support.
Please do at www.transfaithonline.org.
Louis Mitchell is Executive Director of Transfaith, a resource-rich community of support for the global community of religious transgender persons. I'd love for us to stay in touch with each other, and I will ask you to do the same if you will. I want you to know that when you have messages to share, policies to promote, whatever, feel free to get in touch with us.
I thank you, and I appreciate you. I apologize for all the noise. I'm at the Philadelphia Trans Wellness Conference, standing on the street because I wanted to make time to do this, but I also need to go back in. And we contract with the Mazzoni Center to offer the spirituality track here, which is very well attended, and continues to affirm that there are so many trans people of faith and practice that are just looking for ways to belong and to be who they are.
Well, listen, man, thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
My pleasure. God bless you.
You too. Whosoever You Love is a special twice-monthly series of conversations affirming the worth and full value of LGBTQ persons within and beyond religion, supported by the Arcus Foundation, dedicated to the idea that people can live in harmony with one another and the natural world. Learn more about Arcus and its partners at arcusfoundation.org. Find additional Whosoever You Love resources at stateofbelief.com. As much pressure as the political religious right is exerting on government, politics, and culture in this country, who is pushing back? At the forefront is Interfaith Alliance, defending true faith and freedom. And I'm pleased to welcome Alliance President Rabbi Jack Moline to State of Belief Radio once again. Jack, thanks for being with us again.
Always glad to be here with you, Welton.
Let's start with your speaking at the Reimagining Interfaith Rally in Lafayette Park this week. What was that event all about?
It was organized, I think, primarily by leadership in the Unitarian Universalists, one of our great allies and longtime supporters. Mm-hmm. It was a gathering of people from around the world and from multiple faith traditions to reinitiate a call for conscience and activism in the name of faith and on behalf of those who are oppressed and subjected to injustice in this country.
So tell me your message.
My message to them was pretty simple. I said to them, it's great to talk about reimagining interfaith cooperation, but we needed to start with reimagining interfaith. And I posed a series of questions to them. Did they believe that eventually the world would come to believe as they did? And if so, they needed to reimagine their interfaith. Did they believe that they were the sole possessors of truth among all the faith communities? And if so, They had to reimagine their interfaith, and so on and so on. And I said, and only then can we start reimagining interfaith, when we recognize that the great truths that have been articulated in our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution that make it possible for all of us who are believers of any kind to live together in harmony and common purpose, only then would we be able to move forward together.
I want to ask you to talk about the priority initiatives of Interfaith Alliance and why they're priorities.
So that's really important. And this is one of those weeks, Welton, where the news of the day really finally has come back to circle around of what our concern is. Attorney General Sessions' speech at the Justice Department earlier this week, in which he talked about establishing a task force on religious freedom to essentially protect the rights and privileges of the white Christian majority in this country, is really what we have been working on for the length of Interfaith Alliance's existence. The presumption that because there is a certain stratum of people in this country who've enjoyed the full blessings of American rights and privileges and beneficence, that their privilege has to be protected before anybody else can be accommodated. And as others have stepped up to rightfully take their place among those who are guaranteed the rights of not just the First Amendment, but the entire Constitution, there has been significant pushback from people who feel that somehow it's a zero-sum game. If rights and privileges are extended to others, it means that theirs are diminished. And we're seeing that attitude expressed now in the Justice Department as a reflection of the administration's policy. There's a certain amount of humor that the Attorney General is attacking the progressive winds that are blowing through the United States at the behest of the president, and the president is in turn attacking the Attorney General.
I tell you, Jack, it is humorous, but it is also scary to have the highest officer in the United States when it comes to law enforcement and complying with the Constitution to understand he doesn't understand himself what religious freedom means.
Well, there's a certain ridiculousness that he cited both Roger Williams and the Pilgrims in validating the legacy of religious freedom in the United States. It was the Pilgrims who persecuted Roger Williams. And that in and of itself is a frightening lack of understanding of the basics of American history. But the other part of this is that I think offended is the right word, that the Attorney General and those who are in his corner do not understand that we at Interfaith Alliance and our many allies are just as interested in protecting the rights and freedoms of people with whom we disagree politically and with whom we do not share a faith perspective as we are in protecting our own. I don't find him understanding that that is the nature of the Constitution, that we protect the faith of those that we do not share a faith with, we protect the speech of those that we do not share a perspective with, and we protect the rights of assembly of those we wouldn't be in their company with.
Yeah. The political religious right has found such innovative ways to redefine religious freedom to pursue their political agenda. How can Americans who are deeply concerned about this push back without slipping into the same trap of politicizing their own religious convictions?
I think it's extraordinarily important for people of faith to keep in mind what that faith demands of them and not to be glib in deploying the language of their faith as a weapon against their political opponents. What we believed when we felt we had a little more dominance in political discourse, which is the strict separation of religious practice and government policy, what we believed then is just as relevant now. And the fact that there is very bad behavior on the other side does not justify bad behavior on our part.
I want to go to the five questions that you and your colleagues have been working on. you are doing a great job of modeling for us and making direct suggestions for us about some questions that need to be posed to Judge Brett Kavanaugh. Tell us what Interfaith Alliance wants us to ask to him.
So we hope, and I've delivered these questions to senators, including those who sit on the Judiciary Committee, we hope that our questions are going to be posed to him about religious liberty, because though there are other very important issues facing the Supreme Court, I'm not sure there is an issue that is more important than the application of those first freedoms in the First Amendment. So first of all, we want to make sure that the question is asked what role, if any, his religious faith plays in his judicial philosophy. It's a question that I think should be posed to any nominee, to any candidate for office, but especially for someone who could very well be a swing vote on the Supreme Court. Secondly, we want to know if a conflict arose between his faith and his obligations to the Constitution, how he would resolve it. Obviously, we don't want him to pass judgment on a case he hasn't heard yet, but we do want to know what the processes might be if he were to succeed in being elevated to the court, and how he would make those decisions. Thirdly, we want to know what his judicial philosophy is concerning the Establishment Clause. The separation of government and religion is an essential part of our history. There have been some serious questions about what Judge Kavanaugh's approach to this is, and they need to be clarified. Fourth, we want to know if he believes that the Free Exercise Clause supersedes other rights. This, I think, is at the core of so many of the cases that we're dealing with right now. And lastly, what his perspective is on the current state of law concerning direct government funding of religious institutions. It's a very specific area of thought regarding the First Amendment, but one that we've seen decided both ways in recent court decisions.
I know Interfaith Alliance has been very helpful in suggesting other questions for people who are running for office, and I know that's being done again. Tell us about those five questions.
Well, you'll hear some parallels to what I've just talked about with Judge Kavanaugh's questions, but these are a little more generalized because every candidate is a little bit different. First of all, we want to make sure that when it comes to religious freedom, candidates are asked, how will your faith or values influence your views on public policy? That's a personal question for every candidate. We want to know what they believe the proper boundaries are between religion and government. And we want to know how they will protect the rights of constituents who may or may not share their faith and beliefs. The fourth question we want to make sure that candidates are able to answer is how they will balance the principles of their faith to their obligation to defend the Constitution, especially if the two of them come into conflict. And lastly, among these five questions, the question of if it is appropriate for a candidate to assert personal religious beliefs on the campaign trail. Now, we have suggested answers to all of these, of course, and if your listeners would like to know about them, they can visit our website, interfaithalliance.org, or if they let us know, we'll be happy to send them a brochure that will explain those questions and the answers we expect a little bit. And we also this year have for the first time a plastic card, a credit card size thing that can slip in your wallet, has the questions on one side and some suggestions about nonpartisan political activism on the other side.
Jack, we've seen a lot of challenges to our democracy, but we've also seen many Americans step out in new and brave ways to defend our fundamental values. You work every day in Washington, D.C., and with many relationships on Capitol Hill. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about the state of our nation?
I will say that I am cautiously optimistic. It is alarming to me how much has changed in the past 18 months. I did not think that it was possible for endangered communities, vulnerable communities, to be so seriously affected in so short a time. But it is equally, if not more encouraging to me, to see the numbers of Americans who are stepping up first to ameliorate the immediate pain and suffering and injustice, and secondly, to organize to try to create an America that is closer to the values that certainly I think are authentic and that I hope are more desirable. So I am cautiously optimistic.
Hmm. Tell our listeners the two most important ways they could help Interfaith Alliance this week.
To take the actions that we've been talking about, to pose those questions to candidates who are running for office. The campaign season is going to swing into high gear very shortly. The nomination of Judge Kavanaugh is being considered by the Senate right now. And so we need to be asking those questions. We need to be amplifying the voice of Interfaith Alliance so that people don't think it's just emanating from L Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., but it's coming from all over the country. That is particularly important as we get so near the anniversary of what happened last year in Charlottesville, Virginia. A recommitment to the values of America and to what we stand for authentically is important now. The second important action you can take is to help us maintain our voice by contributing to our cause. We are grateful for any contribution from $5 to $5,000 and beyond. So we would be enormously grateful to be able to continue the good work, not only of State of Belief and your voice, Welton, but the broader agenda that we have here in Washington and beyond.
Rabbi Jack Moline is president of Interfaith Alliance, defending true faith and freedom. Among the important initiatives the Alliance supports is this program. Jack, as always, it's great to have you on State of Belief Radio, and you're always welcome here.
Thanks, Will.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. If you think there's value in the conversations that we present and the voices we amplify in the midst of the gridlock our public rhetoric too often becomes, please make your contribution today. Find more information at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. There's a conversation going on there, and we'd like for you to be a part of the discussion. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.